Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. Time to look at some stories from other parts of the world. Jonathan DeBurka Butler joins us once again. Afternoon, Jonathan.
Sean, how are you getting on?
Right, the US we're going to go to first. This is a bizarre story. And I suppose partially because it was allowed in court at all. But tell us about the chap who died.
Yeah, so this story involves a man from Arizona, a man by the name of Chris Pelkey. And he died in a road rage shooting in that state 3 years ago, right? Now, he was 37 years of age at the time. He was a former veteran. I think he'd been in Iraq and Afghanistan. He was decorated, white guy. At the time he died, big beard, big bushy beard and that kind of thing. And he came, anyway, he came on this fateful day, he came to a stop at a red light and something had happened between him and another guy called Gabriel Horcasitas. And whatever happened at this red light, Chris Pelkey got out of the car, confronted Horcasitas, and Horcasitas shot him, okay? And Pelkey died. So, obviously, Horcasitas was arrested, and he was subsequently found guilty of murder and was sentenced, manslaughter, and was sentenced to 10 and a half years in prison, right? But what's interesting about this is that at the sentencing hearing, which took place, I think, about 10 days ago now, Chris Pelkey effectively came back from the dead and he gave a victim impact statement, but it was firsthand because it was done using AI. And we believe this is the first time that this has ever been used in the United States. Now, the AI was put together, or the video was put together, by Pelkey's sister. And they basically used video recordings, voice recordings, pictures of him. And the sister was the one who came up with the script. So she came up with the words, right? It's worth quoting one or two bits, if I may, right? So he, in part of it, he says to Gabriel Horcasitas, "The man who shot me, it is a shame we encountered each other that day in those circumstances. In another life, we probably could have been friends. I believe in forgiveness and a God who forgives. I always have and I still do," right? The judge saw this and the family saw this, and obviously Horcasitas himself saw it. And subsequently, the judge passed the sentencing of 10 and a half years, as I said. Now, it's worth pointing out that the jury in this trial did not see this. So this was after the jury had deliberated. And the reaction of the judge was quite interesting. He thanked the sister for putting this together and said that it was beautifully done, and then delivered his sentence. It's a strange one, though.
Did the court recognise that this was the voice of the victim, or some facsimile constructed by his sister?
Well, there you go.
And whether he would have thought that at all. Well, he was the one who was shot.
That is the question. He was the one who was shot. And you know, the thing about it is that the fact of the matter is, his sister might claim to know this guy as well as anybody else. But is it true? Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, in different circumstances, you're a different person to different people, essentially, because you have different relationships. So who is she to say whether he could forgive him or not? Do you know? So it's an interesting one. So that is the problem that some people have who are commenting on this. They're sort of saying, well, you know, is this going to be used all the time now? You know, does it set a precedent? And in fact, Horcasitas' lawyer, so the defence lawyer, has filed a notice to appeal his sentence, and he's hoping that the appeal court will weigh whether the judge improperly relied on the AI video when handing down the sentence. Now, obviously, he's hoping for a reduction, but I would argue that maybe a judge in the appeals court might go, well, 10 and a half years isn't enough.
The judge was too lenient. Maybe, yeah, because from the tone, the lines you read out, it seemed quite kind, actually, and forgiving. We shall see. Interesting. Right. Guyana, Venezuela, we're going to go to now. And the soldiers there shooting at each other. This is over, there's a disputed region there.
There's a disputed region. We've touched on it once or twice before over the years. This is Essequibo. Guyana is a very small country to the south east of Venezuela. Has a population of about 800,000 people, so it's much smaller than Venezuela, right? And Venezuela claims this district in the west of Guyana, Essequibo. Now, it's claimed it for a very long time, But its interest peaked in about 2015 when they found approximately $11 billion worth of oil off the coast of Guyana. And then all of a sudden, Venezuela became very interested in it, right? And Venezuela basically claim that this was part of the country during Spanish colonial times, and a deal that was done years later in 1899, I think it was, when the British used to look after Guyana, is not legitimate. Okay, yeah. So that's how they lay claim to this particular territory. And over the last few years, they have been intimidating Guyana, right? So they held a sham referendum asserting its claim to the territory a few years ago. They've threatened to annex most of the region and make it the 24th state. It seems to be a trend at the moment of Venezuela. And they're going to hold gubernatorial elections there at the end of this month, allegedly. Now, all of this, the United Nations and various different international bodies are saying to Venezuela, absolutely no way, you can't be doing this. And so a lot of the stuff has been sort of gesture politics, if you know what I mean. This is the type of thing that, you know, leaders like this keep in their back pocket to get nationalism on the rise and to deflect from what's actually going on at home. But lately it's been getting a bit more violent. There were attacks, there was an ambush by a group of men on Guyanese soldiers, which wounded six of them. And then a couple of days ago, Guyanese soldiers came under attack three times in less than 24 hours. The armed men in this case apparently wore civilian clothing. They carried out three separate attacks while the army were on patrol on a river there in Essequibo. So there's concern in Guyana that Venezuela is ramping up the stakes here a little bit.
Yeah, and of course, because these men weren't in army fatigues or anything, then we don't know who they are, where they came from.
No, exactly. And the interesting thing, I had a little look into it to see, you know, is it a case that there's, you know, pockets of Venezuelans living in this, you know, and there might be some sort of vague, legitimate reason, you know, for Venezuela doing this. And there really isn't. Most of this territory is populated by indigenous groups that are quite happy to be administered and be left alone, essentially,
by
the Guyanese. It should be said that the oil that Venezuela and Guyana found and that Venezuela is after isn't actually in this territory. It's in the ocean. But were Venezuela to get this territory, their border would extend out to the ocean where the oil is.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
But at the moment, does the Guyanese border extend out where the oil is?
Oh, yes. And they have all of it. In fact, I think we might have done a story maybe 6 or 7 months ago, I can't remember, where we explained how the government was handing out an oil dividend to every individual citizen.
Yes, that's right.
So they're doing very well out of it.
Yeah, okay.
And Venezuela are a little bit jealous at the moment.
Mexico we're going to go to next. And this is a story about a judge being arrested over the disappearance of 43 students.
Yeah, so this was 43 students who disappeared all the way back in September of 2014. They were part of a teacher training college in Ayotzinapa. And it would have been well known over the years for its connection to left-wing politics, okay? And these students were actually on their way to Mexico City for an anniversary march in relation to another massacre that happened in 1968. But anyway, as they were on their way to this particular march, they were going through a city known as Iguala, and they were stopped by police and army, okay?
Mm.
Now, it should also be said that the bus that they were on, they had commandeered or had stolen, really, for want of a better way of putting it. We know that the bus was shot at, and we know that these 43 students were taken off the bus, but we don't know exactly what happened to them after that. It is presumed that they are dead. So far, out of 43 students, only three of the victims' remains have turned up. The other 40 are missing. And we suspect, or the suspicion is, that there's been a major cover-up in the state of Guerrero where this actually happened. And lots of people have been involved. There's been lots of arrests. As far as I know, there hasn't been any convictions to date, right? Mm. So the latest twist in this particular tale is that a now-retired judge, a 79-year-old woman by the name of Lambertina Marin, was arrested last week. And the suspicion is that she tampered with evidence. Effectively, there was some tapes that would have given video recordings that would have given investigators a lead into what had happened. and they were wiped while she was responsible for looking after the place where they were being kept, essentially. Yeah. So she's been arrested. We don't know much more than that, unfortunately.
Yeah, and is it known who took them off the bus? Was it troops or police? Or?
So we know that police and troops were involved in initially stopping the bus, because we have evidence, there's photographs of that. The suspicion is that there might well have been some gangs involved. I know that in the past, back in 2015, there was a local mayor who was arrested, who had a bit of a difficulty with them from a political point of view. But really, there are so many theories and there's been so many investigations around this that it's so hard to follow exactly what's going on. And there's no conclusion yet.
Yeah, that's quite extraordinary. The Chad we're going to go to next, where the former Prime Minister there has been arrested.
Yeah, this is Success Masra. He was Prime Minister for about a year between 2023 and 2024. He has been arrested because he is accused of inciting hatred and violence through social media posts, right? There was, about 10 or 12 days ago, there was an intercommunal clash in a state there in the southwest of the country, down on the bottom, on the border with Cameroon, I think. Mm. 42 people were killed. Now, there's an awful lot of clashes between farmers and herders in that part of the world, right? There's ethnic divisions, but there's also, you know, fights over land, and it's quite complex. So this individual, who, as you said, was a former prime minister but is now an opposition leader, was arrested. His party claims that he's been kidnapped. They say that there was no court summons or warrant produced by the people who arrested him. And they're saying that it's politically motivated. The New York Times actually reviewed his social media, Facebook and X accounts, and found that there was no posts of that nature, you know, incitement or anything like that at all. So there's everybody scratching their head wondering, you know, where are these posts and how did he incite this hatred? There's no evidence of it so far. So the concern is that there's, you know, going to be another political crackdown, which they have every couple of years here.
Yeah. And the name of his party is the Transformers Party.
Yeah.
Bit of a mad name. Was he the only one who's been arrested, or was it kind of a lot of opposition figures being arrested?
So he was the only one in this instance, or the one that we've got a lot of attention around anyway. There has been a number of opposition leaders who've been arrested over the years. There was one killed, a man by the name of Yaya Dillo was killed last year in very shady circumstances. I think authorities were trying to arrest him and there was a gun battle. So you've got a guy there who's the president called Idriss Deby. He's the son of Idriss Deby Sr., who was around until the 1990s. He was killed in 2021 and his son just kind of slotted in and took over. And he has been quite just as hard, I suppose, as his dad was. But he would argue that there's a lot going on in that region, which we've covered before with, you know, various Islamist revolutionaries and the like operating in the area.
Right, South Korea we're going to go to next, where there's a lot of North Koreans, it seems.
Yeah, well, there's a few, more than there used to be. So they have a ministry there in South Korea called the Ministry of Unification. And since 2010, they have been hiring North Korean defectors to be in the public service, to work in the public service. Life is very hard for North Koreans when they come down to the South, right? They're seen by many people as pariahs.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's very hard for them to integrate. Never mind the culture shock, the fact that they're rejected by, you know, people that they thought were, you know, going to welcome them is another factor as well. So the Minister for Unification has tried to encourage some into the public service, and they now have 211 defectors working in the public sector, and that's up 17 people from the previous year. Now, you might say to yourself, why is this a news story? I think it's a news story because they are talking about it. The South Koreans are making a big deal out of this. So the Minister for Unification held a lunch with some of these people, and there was a big hoo-ha around it and lots of photographs taken. And I feel that the reason they've done this is because the numbers of people defecting from the North has declined significantly in the last 5 or 6 years. Ah. So up until about 2020, you used to get, you know, in and around always over 1,000 people, right? But now it's gone down to just around 100. In 2023, I think there was 99 people who defected from the north. Crackdowns in the north, and it's just more difficult and more expensive to do. So I think by doing this, they're maybe trying to encourage more people to come from the north, and maybe encourage the 30,000 people from the north who are living in the south, and sort of say to them, look, it's not such a bad place. If you know, try harder and you can become a good South Korean.
Yeah, and in South Korea, is there any concern that any of these 211 people might be just spies for North Korea?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, to tell you the truth. I'm sure in the pubs and clubs up and down the country, there are plenty of people who are wondering that themselves. But I haven't seen any written evidence of that so far.
Right, so what should we look out for over the next week?
Yeah, a few things coming up. I think tomorrow could be quite interesting. Donald Trump will host Cyril Ramaphosa at the White House. The fact that he's there is amazing. So this is obviously what's going on with this so-called Afrikaner refugee controversy. So that'll be an interesting one. And then speaking of Muppets, on the same day, Kermit the Frog delivers a commencement address at the University of Maryland. Now, the reason that is because Jim Henson went to college there, apparently.
Ah, right.
So that's why Kermit the Frog is doing that. I thought that was interesting. And then on Saturday, the Palme d'Or winner will be announced at the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay, that's all good stuff. Thanks a million,
thanks,
Jonathan. Jonathan DeBurka Butler there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.